Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, May 30th. And today we got some burner account hysteria on NBA Finals Eve. This is your boy Matt Shook, the AP writer out here in Chicago covering the NBA, also a Pistons fan my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for making us part of your daily routine. We appreciate that. Today we're going to be talking burner accounts on Twitter as the revelation from the Ringer website came out late Tuesday night about Philadelphia 76ers executive Brian Colangelo and his five secret Twitter accounts. We'll also have part two of an interview with Ken Calvert, the former Pistons PA announcer in the Silverdome for a few years and also for many years at the Palace before Mason took over for the going to work era. Also, we got a new coach in Orlando for the Magic. We're going to be hearing from Philip Rossman Reich of Locked On Magic about Steve Clifford, as now we are just down to the Pistons and Raptors that are coachless right now throughout the league. And today for Pistons playoff playback, we're going back to 1987 and the end, a devastating end. For Pistons fans, maybe the toughest series for Pistons fans to stomach over these last several years. One of those painful weeks continues here on Pistons playoff playback. Nothing good about the three installments that we're bringing to you this week during the holiday week. But like I said, the NBA Finals starting on Thursday night. You should be listening to Locked On Warriors and Locked On Cavaliers for all that content, and also Locked On NBA. We'll have your daily dose of everything you need to know about the NBA Finals as well. I've got some exciting draft coverage stuff coming up that we've been talking about throughout the network here, and excited to share that stuff with you, even though your boy Matt won't be part of much of it, as it's mostly obviously going to be a first-round focused thing, and the Pistons aren't part of the first round as we speak presently. Anyway, but Brian Colangelo saved us, maybe saved the NBA playoffs a little bit. A pretty entertaining read that you should check out on The Ringer that was released late Tuesday night, some updates on Wednesday as well. Brian Colangelo, formerly of the Toronto Raptors and now the general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, he had five fake Twitter accounts. All this is unconfirmed by him or the team, but if you read the story and check out the accounts, it's hard to believe that there's any chance it's not him. And really, one of those situations where the lie, the denial, makes it look a lot worse. The cover-up, worse than the crime, I guess is the way that you would put it. But anyways, he would be tweeting these kind of insider nuggets and opinions about things going on with his team, including that he tweeted multiple times at journalists about how Jahlil Okafor failed a physical with New Orleans and broke up a trade possibility at the deadline last year, which is something that Brian Colangelo took a lot of heat for, that whole situation with Okafor sitting out and people wondering what was going on there. These Twitter accounts also called Nerlens Noel a selfish punk and revealed some inside stuff about him, like that Noel was caught playing laser tag while recovering from a hand surgery. Also talked about Joel Embiid, went right at the franchise star now, knocking his immaturity, which isn't something that's extremely profound. I think some people have knocked Joel Embiid's immaturity probably fairly for the most part over the years. But they say that Embiid didn't tell doctors about some knee pain that he had before a nationally televised game so that Embiid could play in that game. And subsequently, knee surgery later led to his season ending early last year and preventing him from getting the Rookie of the Year award last year as well. Also ripping on Embiid for being on stage and dancing at a Meek Mill concert. If you follow the NBA online, you probably remember that being a big story as well. Then with the rookie, Markelle Fultz, the top pick from last year's draft, pointing out that it was his personal trainer and close family friend that was messing with his jump shot while everyone was being quiet about it on the record and whatnot. For the record, Brian Colangelo has denied that these are his accounts, and the team said that they are investigating. But like I said, it's one of those situations where the lie seems to make it worse, and I'd be shocked at this point if he's still employed by the 76ers at the time of the draft. This could legitimately impact the future of an up-and-coming Philadelphia team, their relationship with Joel Embiid, their pursuit of LeBron James and Paul George and other top free agents this offseason. Although, like I said, I expect Colangelo to be fired or resign or whatever, and this kind of all go away, pretty much like his career as being a top front-facing general manager in this league, I would think. And of course, it also has led to a million lame jokes on NBA Twitter. You know, how can you be sure that I'm not a burner account for so-and-so and all that stuff? So congratulations if you made one of those types of jokes over these last couple days. But this is the kind of thing that has made the NBA a 12-month sport. I know that it's there's a certain segment of you maybe listening who don't care at all about this story or similar stories like this, and you're probably better for it, by the way, but avoiding kind of all the lameness and jokes and everything. But it got me to kind of some deeper thoughts, one that I've had a lot lately, and even more as you get older, just how dumb grown adults can be and how bad some people are at their jobs. I think, you know, in Washington, you see this, Washington, D.C., you kind of put a face on the part of life where, oh, just because someone is rich and famous doesn't mean they're smart at all, really. I mean, it's just something you thought as a kid, that maybe everyone who's at some high place has got some brilliance or something that they know that other folks don't know. And then the other thing that brings to light is the legacy kids out there. They're taking a hit in current events as well. I think if we talk about Washington, D.C. a little bit in there too, but just how worthless some of these people can be just because you are born into a family or born into some wealth or born into some positions of power that maybe you're not necessarily deserving of that really at a bird's eye view. Also, one other thing is with professional sports, the teams we follow and root for, we might be surprised with just how poorly run some of these organizations could be. And I think about the Dallas Mavericks story and the rampant sexual harassment and unchecked nature of it and lack of leadership on all forms with that one. And I think this story with Colangelo kind of marries all three of those kind of causes there. Brian Colangelo, a two-time Executive of the Year with Toronto formerly, an unassailable reputation on that front, involved with USA Basketball, like his father Jerry Colangelo runs the show there, as well a longtime NBA executive, success with many teams Jerry Colangelo had. And again, Brian being a legacy kid, so he must be bred for this, you know, according to the conventional thinking about being Jerry Colangelo's kid. But with pro sports, you know, Philly has to get rid of Sam Hinkie because of the league's coming down on their tanking, and they bring in this guy who doesn't even know better than to throw his whole career away for this, you know, for nothing, for being so thin-skinned and not having an outlet out there to rebuke critics that he has to feel like he has to do this. And if you read the way that these accounts, you know, followed all these similar other accounts that had things to do with his son's basketball teams in Canada, people that he knew throughout his career in Arizona, people that he knew. It was just, you could run the reports, and people that were much smarter than me and they could run reports on who people follow and like and retweet on Twitter, really easy to find out that these five accounts were linked to the same person from the habits and the people that they were following, you know. And I know that maybe this is, part of it's just being like an old person on the computer and online, but you got to be better than that. I mean, I'm an old person online, and I try to learn what's going on in ways that are relevant to me. And certainly I wouldn't do anything to jeopardize, you know, a great career chance you have or something like that, or a great career position you have that maybe you probably don't deserve at the end of the day. But basketball and the media, these are all things that are very relevant to Brian Colangelo and his job. And he needed to be a lot better than that. He needed to be a lot smarter than to know that this was all going to come back to him. And to be that spiteful and divisive about his own team and about things that are going on in the locker room is going to be something that makes him probably unemployable in terms of being the head of an organization going forward. Now, the way that these golden parachutes work for a lot of these guys, obviously, I'm sure he'll find great work at some level of basketball. And at some level, that's going to be deserved because I'm sure he does bring something to the table with some of these organizations. But, a shame that great jobs have been kind of wasted on a guy like him over these last few weeks. But thanks to him for giving us someone to talk about here on a lull day on the NBA calendar. So what's next? Well, I guess it'd be the NBA Finals starting at 9 o'clock Eastern on Thursday night. The spread for Game 1 is up to 12.5 points from 12 for the Golden State Warriors over the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1, which will be at Oracle Arena in Oakland, like I said, on Thursday night. And we'll talk more about the finals on tomorrow's show. But I got some more from the great Ken Calvert, part two of an interview we had with him last week. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now we're being joined here on Locked On Pistons by Ken Calvert, the voice that you guys all know, formerly of WCSX 94.7, pretty much the voice of rock and roll in Detroit for many years. And now hosting a podcast, the Ken Calvert Show. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and for our purposes, the longtime public address announcer for the Detroit Pistons. You mentioned the championships, Ken, but both of the clinching games were actually on the road for the Lakers and Portland in the championship. The tough one for you, but do you have any memories that stand out above the others of singular moments, singular games that
stood out? Shot heard around the world, the Vinnie Johnson. You know, what was it, 007 on the clock? And just, you know, he hit that bucket. That was it. Game over. We did it back-to-back, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that was the most excited I've ever been in any sporting moment. Bigger than Gibby's blast, you know?
Yeah.
So, but no, it was kind of a drag to not... Nobody wanted, you just wanted to win it. You didn't want to, you know, you didn't want to have to come home. Would have been nice, but no, I never got to do that. Can't go back. But I do remember when we did that, when we were playing the Lakers, there's a YouTube out there that somebody sent me of Dick Stockton introducing me. And that's like on my highlight reel, you know. Let's go to public address announcer Ken Calvert for today's introductions. And they had written them for me. I couldn't do my stuff. Do you know what I mean? They didn't have a problem with Dumars. But aside from that, I had to read the CBS script.
Oh, for the finals, a little buttoned up
person. Yeah. And there was a guy next to me who was like counting me down. It was like, man, we do this to the second. So don't screw around with it. Kept saying, don't get cute. Don't get cute. I was like, okay, I won't get cute.
Ken Calvert.
Go ahead, sorry. I could ramble on, and I don't want to.
Ken Calvert, former Pistons public address announcer, joining us here on Locked On Pistons. Ken, while you were doing the introductions, obviously the famous background music was The Final Countdown by Europe.
Sure.
And I know that you know everyone in music. Did you ever know that those guys knew about their fame in Detroit with that song? Or any stories about if they knew how connected they were to the Bad Boys' success back
then? Matt, the power of a great interviewer, you just displayed it there, because that is a great question. I don't
know.
Hey,
all right.
But I will find out for you. But that is really a great question. They obviously knew within a year or so, because I suspect that they went to their mailboxes and were getting these royalty checks, because ASCAP and BMI has some sort of a stadium rate that any time you play a song in a stadium, you have to pay royalties on that. That's a whole different podcast. I should think about doing that. That's why ESPN put out those jock jams. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that a lot of those artists settled for a set fee, a set rate, for use in stadium, you know. So it's. I know that I went into a strange place there, but to answer your question, I don't know if they did the first year. Somebody had to tell them there's this team of Detroit doing really well that's using your song as their theme, you know. And then Thorogood as well, with, you know, once Bad to the Bonehead, get out of the way, you know. And God, those were fun days. Jeez.
Did the stadium folks or the palace folks, I mean, you got yourself right there. Were you involved in why did they pick The Final Countdown, or maybe, like you mentioned, Bad to the Bone, some of the other music that was picked?
The guy who's still with the organization, who's a genius, and he's a music aficionado. I wouldn't want to go toe-to-toe in a game with him at all. Pete Scorch, do you know Pete?
I've heard of Pete, but I have never met
Pete. Pete runs all the in-game. He does it all. He wears many, many hats, but he picked that song. When you heard that grumble at the beginning, that boom, boom, da-da-da-da, it still gives me the chills, you know.
Yeah, but it's a great song to have on the playlist at the gym for the workouts.
Because of the fact that I never tell people I play the drums. I own a set of drums. that drum kick, you know, then you know, uh-oh, here we go, man. We're on our way. Let's go. Let's do it. And it was just wonderful. Actually, I'm enjoying this, Matt, because you're bringing back great memories, which I need.
It seemed to be kind of the perfect soundtrack, and the Joe Dumars call, and then the introduction, and all the colleges that the guys came from. I know as a young Pistons fan myself at that time, those were things that were kind of the soundtrack of our childhood in some ways.
You know, and then the other thing, there was the game inside the game for me, because a lot of the players just assumed because I said it was true, but there was a guy that sat next to me for years and years and years. His name was Maury Moronic, and he was with the team forever and ever and ever. And Maury was the old time, you know, he had the stat book, you know, and game number two, you know, game number 41, you know, and he would write down everything. And he would always, you know, I knew who made the bucket up, but I was never really clear on assist, no assist, you know, and he would say, you know, from Dumars, and I would say from Joe Dumars, and all of a sudden somebody to my right would say to me, no, there was too much time, no assist on that. I'd say, well, you corrected on the screen. I can't go back and say anything. And then there was times. But Sally was, I love Sal. And Sal would always, you know, check in. How you doing, man? And he said, you going to get me some assists tonight? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, if I'm even close, I get the assist. And so I kind of worked out this little deal. I didn't get anything out of it. I don't want to sound like it was underhanded, but it became kind of a funny joke between us. If he kind of even put his hands on the ball and got it to the shooter, I'd give him the assist. You know what I mean? People would look at me like, what? Joe Dumars from John Spider Sally.
Spider Sally gets some unofficial assists.
Sally would just light him up with a smile and give me a little thumbs up. And so that's Ron awesome. Campbell, who worked next to me, who was great, still a great friend of mine, got the biggest kick out of that. And I'd look at him and he'd go, no. And I said, I didn't think so. He said, no. He said, you're killing me. I said, why? He said, because he's got it written into his bonuses.
And, you know, nice.
And so, because Campbell was the CFO. And so, you know, they'd bring up their stats at the end of the year. Look at my assists. They're up 15%. Yeah, because of Ken Calvert, they are. You know what I mean? The deal you worked out with the PA guy. But no, that was the other
fun. Given you a cut.
You know, that was the other cool thing about it, man, is that at the end of the day, if you come from rock and roll, you're a bit of a groupie, no matter what. You know what I mean? Hey, man, the band's coming in. Cool. Can I get a picture? Uh-huh. You know. But I remember like watching Jordan and Pippen and just all sorts of whoever Charles. Coming in, and they'd have to sit in the box more or less like the college days, you know what I mean? And I remember Jordan and Barkley and guys actually still thinking it was like a college game and think that they like had to check in and tell you who they were checking, you know what I mean? And I was like, you don't have to do that anymore. You can just go in at the whistle or at the buzzer, you know what I mean?
We know who you are, Charles Barkley.
Yeah, but anyway, I would say like you know, Jordan would come down, and I was like, God, I was like, what, 2 feet from him? And I just stare at him like, I'm this close to Michael Jordan. And I just casually go, Hey, Michael, how you doing, man? And you'd look, how we go? I'm all right. I'd say, yeah, I said, everything good? And he'd look at me and go, yeah, everything's good, man. How about two of you? And I went, good, no complaints. You know, but it was just like a little game I'd play, like, can I get these guys to talk to me, you know? And I remember I'd say to Barkley, and I knew he was kidding right away, I'd say, Sir Charles, everything good, man? Shut up, man. Shut up.
But, well, in fairness, Lambeer and Mahorn were probably about to fight him right when you asked him.
Lambeer, I swear to God, I lived in total terror of the man. Total. And finally, one day, I don't know after how many years, he said, you got to let it go, bro. I'm not that bad a guy. You know what I mean? But so we talked, and in fact, he and his wife had a beautiful place in the Grand Cayman, and somebody said, hey, you want to ask him if you can rent it sometime? So I said, yeah, right. And I eventually got up the guts to do it because my wife became pretty good friends with his wife, Chris. And so I said, hey, Chris and Anna have been talking about your place in Grand Cayman. He goes, oh, man, you ought to rent it. He said, I can't stand it sitting empty. He said, tell Chris to send you the dates. Use it, man. I want you to use it. I need the money. I was like, well, that was easy. And kind of from then on, we were kind of good buddies. But he would look at me like, you know, he was a clock watcher. You know, he was really into, like, start the clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it was, there was Honest Mickey Evans. Honest Mickey Evans, may he rest in peace. He ran the clock. So that was he would scream at me, and I was like, I'm the announcer. I don't run the clock. All I do is announce, Bill. I don't keep stats or do anything else.
Except for Sally's stats.
I don't have any buttons in front of me, just this microphone. And that has a button on it, but it's always on.
Thanks again to former Pistons PA announcer Ken Calvert for joining us on Locked On Pistons. I got some more with him, so we'll hold over some more of that content for Thursday's show. I got his email address from a friend of mine and was told that Ken will have no trouble filling airtime, and he did just that, living up to the billing there. So thanks again to him. He's got some Isaiah Thomas stories, Rodman stuff as well. And I also asked him about Bruce Springsteen, my self-indulgent boss question that I have for all the music aficionados that come on the show as well. So that's what I do. That's what we have here on Locked On Pistons. But anyway, Pistons still need a coach in a front office. Who cares? They just haven't had a coach for a few weeks now. Update on the front office search from Zach Lowe of ESPN yesterday. Reported that Shane Battier has taken his name out of consideration for the Pistons, for any Pistons front office positions. Kind of another black mark on this whole situation. That was kind of the guy I wanted. But anyways, Orlando has replaced Frank Vogel as head coach with Steve Clifford in a bit of a musical chairs of retreads, as Clifford was fired by the Charlotte Hornets after last season. For the Pistons, obviously Dwayne Casey is still out there, the former Raptors coach, Jerry Stackhouse, some other names as well. But here's Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic talking about the Steve Clifford hire here on the network.
Hello, this is Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic. I'm sure all of you are getting ready for the NBA Finals and probably the NBA Draft as well if you're a team like the Orlando Magic that don't have much to play for in June. But a little bit of breaking news today. The Orlando Magic have hired Steve Clifford as their new head coach. The former Charlotte Hornets head coach, of course, had, in my opinion, a fairly successful five-year run with the Hornets, making the playoffs twice, helping turn around a franchise that was really, really down on its luck. A team that obviously had the worst record in league or the worst win percentage in league history during the lockout year, and then was still struggling to get back up on its feet. In his first year, he had a 20-win turnaround with the Hornets, getting them to 43 wins and a first-round playoff sweep to the then LeBron James-led Miami Heat. They would return to the playoffs in 2016 with a 48-34 record, and continue to struggle to kind of reach those lofty expectations again. The one thing that I really like about Steve Clifford for this Orlando Magic team specifically is that his Charlotte Hornets teams always had a set identity. Except for the last 2 years, which coaches tend to go stale after a while, but except for the last 2 years, the Hornets had a top 10 defensive rating. In fact, even in the last 2 years, the Hornets had a positive net rating. They missed the playoffs with a positive net rating. In fact, I would argue their 36-46 record even through injuries, even through some of the problems that the Hornets had, was a vast underachievement. At least statistically, it was. They were really a 500 team at the end of the day. And 500 gets into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. So some bad luck in late games, so on and so forth, probably cost them as much as anything. But Steve Clifford here is a coach that establishes an identity. He has a high expectation level, and that helps young teams trying to take that next step, at least get into playoff contention. And that's where the Magic are right now, frankly. After 6 years missing the playoffs, never winning more than 35 games, they really need a coach that's just going to get them to that next level. They just need a coach that's going to get them to be competitive every single night. And that's not something the Magic have had for a very, very long time. And so this hire, to me, yes, it kind of feels like the Magic settled a little bit. They went for a coach with some established ties to the franchise. He was an assistant coach under Stan Van Gundy from 2008 to 2012, but also a coach that establishes a culture, establishes an identity. And that's what the Magic need more than anything else. It is a retread. I probably would have liked to see them go with an up-and-coming assistant coach, give someone new a chance, but that comes with risk too. If there's one thing that I can say definitively about Steve Clifford is he's going to demand a standard of play for this team and begin to establish a culture. And that's what the Magic, again, need more than anything else. So the Orlando Magic have hired Steve Clifford. You'd, of course, check out Locked On Magic later on today. For more on the hire, I'll be down at the press conference. Or I was down at the press conference, I guess, since this will be coming tomorrow. But definitely check out Locked On Magic for the latest on the hire of Steve Clifford, as well as some other draft tidbits. I'll be actually previewing the NBA Finals for my listeners on Thursday's episode as well. But for now, this has been Philip Rosenreich of Locked On Magic and Orlando Magic Daily. Be sure to subscribe to all the Locked On podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the fun places to download podcasts to your podcast-enabled listening device. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks to Philip, and we'll probably see you next time the Magic need another coach after he's fired in a couple few years. Ah, isn't it nice and refreshing to actually look down to a franchise? Thanks to the Orlando Magics of the world for that and always being there for us as Pistons fans. But now time for Pistons playoff playback going back to 1987. We'll keep it short today as we're running a little long here on the podcast. But last week we had the steal by Bird in Game 5, and the Pistons responded with a blowout win to their credit in Game 6 at the Silverdome, setting up Game 7 at the Garden in the 1987 Eastern Conference Finals, May 30th, 1987. Game 7 against the Boston Celtics, a season that Pistons fans thought might be the breakthrough, the one that gets them to the NBA Finals, possibly to the championship as well. But this series was chalk. The home team won every game, but Detroit almost broke through at the Garden until late in the third quarter. Vinnie Johnson and Adrian Dantley hit heads after diving for a loose ball. Concussions there. Larry Bird, he was nails down the stretch for the Celtics. Check it out on YouTube. You can watch this game as I have in these last couple weeks. He was great. 37 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. Getting the win for the Celtics despite 35 points from Joe Dumars, 25 from Isaiah Thomas. 117 to 114 was the final in the sweltering Boston Garden. The Pistons just couldn't win there in Boston back then. Believe it or not, for such a great franchise at that time, this was the Pistons' 18th straight loss in Boston. And that streak would become 21 with 3 losses in the following regular season in Beantown before a Game 1 win in the Garden in 1988, leading to the 6-game win in the Eastern Conference Finals in 1988 there. And the Pistons would get to the NBA Finals for the first time in franchise history. You think about this run that the Pistons had with the Bad Boys. They won the 2 titles, but they lost in 7 to Boston. They lost the next year in 7 to the Los Angeles Lakers. And I guess we can look back as kind of the natural rite of passage in some ways, but you also wonder what could have been with possibly some more titles for the taking in that era. But give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons, and also give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattSchuk. Give us a rating and review on iTunes so other Pistons fans can find us. Tell your friends about us. We're still going strong here all summer. And thanks for listening, everyone, all the support that you've given us. Thanks to Ken Calvert, to Philip Reichman Ross for his insight on the Orlando Magic. And we got NBA Finals coming up on Thursday, so a little bit more basketball before we got a summer of NBA draft and new coach and all that other stuff. But this is your host, Matt Schuch, for Locked On Pistons, and thanks for listening, everyone.